This is Imperfectly Polished with Monique Bondi. It's styled, not staged.
Welcome back. Today's Wednesday, the 8th of July, and welcome to Imperfectly Polished, the space where we celebrate confidence, wellness, self-care, and the beautifully messy journey of being human. Last week, we had a conversation that struck a nerve. We spoke about the silent cost of keeping up, about financial pressure, comparison, debt, and the emotional weight that money carries. We discovered that financial stress isn't just about what's in your bank account. It affects our relationships, our mental health, our families, and even how we see ourselves. After last week's show, so many of you reached out, not to ask about the investments or interest rates, but with one simple question. Jonathan, what do I do now? If last week's conversation helped us understand the problem, today is about talking about taking the next step. Because here's the truth. Not everyone is in the same financial situation and not everyone needs the same advice. The journey towards financial wellness looks different depending on where you are today. So today, we're moving on from awareness to action. Joining me once again is Chartered Accountant, Certified Personal Finance Counselor, author of How to Survive the Middle Class, and the man many of you know as the Money Guy, Jonathan Penn. John, welcome back to Imperfectly Polished.
Thanks for having me.
So, John, we couldn't have you back without revisiting one of our favorite segments. Last week, we asked you what's in your wallet. This week, let's get to know a little bit more about the man behind the Money Guy. Last week, we spoke about money. This week, I want to talk about your relationship with it. Has writing your book changed the way you think about your own finances?
Not really. It's been such an interesting journey from working as a chartered accountant to now still being a chartered accountant, but also a certified personal finance counselor. I've been doing this work for a long time and sitting with people, opening up their bank statements and having the conversations that people would prefer to avoid. The book came out of that. Mm-hmm. So it didn't change how I think about money, but it did make me realize how much I've learned without ever stopping and actually writing it down. 15 years or so, couples, families, workshops, one-on-one sessions. The book is really just what I've learned from all of them.
Is there something you would spend money on today that your younger self would never have understood?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. What I would do today, and not 10, 15, 20 years mm-hmm. ago, is mm-hmm. throwing money at a problem. Sometimes you just have to do it. And I like to look at a concept called materiality.
Yeah.
It's actually very much used in accounting and auditing. But basically, it talks about or it refers to significance of an amount or a transaction. So basically, whether is this issue large enough for it to matter? Yes. Overall, in the overall picture, in the overall yes. scheme of things. And I use the same thing as I say. So what I say is people should always have their own materiality number. Mm. And it's basically a threshold below which something, you just don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of something that I've learned over the years. Younger me would have sweated for, you know, every rand.
Sweated bullets.
Yeah, now I know that some problems, they're just worth solving with money. And the mental energy saved is, I suppose, the real return.
Absolutely, I agree with that. What's one purchase you've made that you've never regretted?
So about 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. I bought a share on the US Stock Exchange called mm-hmm. NVIDIA. And I see you're not getting excited. You don't know what NVIDIA is. Don't take it personally. Most people won't. But it's the largest company in the world.
Yeah.
It's worth about $5 trillion. I mean, I wish I had bought more of it. It was a fluke. I would lie to you if I was saying, no, I did the analysis and I did all the research, but it was a fluke. So it was definitely a great purchase.
I mean, I'd get more excited if you say you bought shares in Zara.
Or Gucci or something
like that. Yeah. See, I'm not so materialistic. Zara is fine for me. Has there ever been a financial position in your own life that taught you a lesson the hard way, John?
I think money and relationships, if there's a transaction with friends or family, mm-hmm. more often than not, it can blow up if it's not handled properly. When money enters a personal relationship, all bets are off. the really dark side of people and their nature comes through, and I've seen it in my own life. So now my rule is don't do any business with friends, and it just can't be done. So that's something that I've learned the hard way.
So last week, John, we explored why so many people feel financially overwhelmed. Today, we're moving from awareness to action. Because before we can make a better financial decisions, we first need to understand exactly where we are. So after last week's show, what was the biggest message you received from listeners?
There was so much feedback. Just, you know, people at Shul, just all over the show. And there were two main themes. The first one, which I think we'll unpack a bit later on, but the first one was, is there any hope for the community, or is it all doom and gloom? That was the first question. And the second one was people saying, John, we've already cut everything. Mm. We can't ask our boss for an increase. It's not going to happen. Now what?
Yes.
That was the common thread, which I hear a lot. And that question, it changed how I actually wanted to approach today, because they're actually right.
Yeah.
You can't cut more. You can't earn more necessarily. And what do you do? Mm-hmm. So I think the conversation has to go somewhere a little bit different. So as I said, you can't cut anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to restructure the problem. And I've been actually last night I was thinking about financial wellness and what it actually is. And I'm still working this out. Me and Claude are still at it, and with ChatGPT on the side. But I was thinking of something, what people need to be looking at.
Yes.
And there are three elements that I think are the correct approach. Mm-hmm. And that is, number one, behavior. Number two, technical. And number three, prevention. Those are the three areas that need to be looked at. And just by chance, I actually came across this. Claude informed me that in the public health system, they also have these three concepts. You know, when somebody walks in with diabetes or obesity or smoking, what do? They also have a three-tier response.
Approach, yeah.
Theirs, in the public, apparently, I'm a medical professional, but theirs is treatment, prevention, and behavior change. So it's interesting that those, you know, there's a mirroring there. But again, so my three steps we need to look at, and you need to look at them all. You can't leave one of them out. It's behavior, it's technical, and then it's prevention. So, you know, maybe if I can just touch on those.
Yes,
just very
do.
Basically,
yes.
When we talk about behavior, we're talking, as I said, the behavior before budget. And I said this last week, there's no solutions, there's only trade-offs. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that we looked at last week, and we spoke about comparison last week, how dangerous it is, how one needs to have the honest conversations. And money scripts, if you remember that, we spoke a lot about that. And that deals a lot about psychology. The second area, which is technical, is the stuff that is dealing with budgeting and debt reduction and emergency funds and compound interest. That's the technical side of things. And prevention, which is what we're doing today, right? Mm-hmm. We're having an imperfectly polished radio show with you. We have a book, or I have a book, How to Survive the Middle Class. The 10 commitments, premarital financial education, community talks, early intervention. Those, just to finish off, is the prevention. So those three tiers, I think, are necessary to tackle this problem.
John, so we'll touch on all of that later again. One of the biggest ideas in your work is that not everyone needs the same financial advice. Why would that be? Why is that?
So I think it's important just to say that the intervention, I like to call it intervention, is for grieving Stephen. It's not going to do anything for achieving Stephen, who is on the extreme end. I know we'll speak about the Stephens in a moment. Mm-hmm. But basically, the financial options and advice that you get are very different to what I guess. Mm-hmm. This generic advice, which you know someone just mentioned to us off air now, save 10% of your income, 50-30-20, Dave Ramsey, all of these things, you know, cut the coffee, we spoke about that last week. It's not wrong, right? So hear me clearly now. That advice isn't wrong. It's just useless if it's given to the wrong person at the wrong time. Telling someone in a genuine crisis to start investing, that's not helpful.
That's not helpful.
It's tone deaf, and it's
it's not what they need to hear right
It's not
now.
What they need to hear, and it actually makes people feel like they're failing when the advice was simply wrong for them.
Yes, sure. Can you walk us through, we're going to go back to each of the five Stephens, because we briefly touched on it last week and explain what they represent.
Yeah, so just before I explain it, I would like, you know, the listeners, they can go and download my book for free. I'm giving it out for free because...
that's what Johnny does.
Just so magnanimous. you can buy me a coffee or something. But go to my website, www.themoneyguide.co.za, and you can download my book there. So basically, there's five Stevens. Mm-hmm. They're not labels. They're a map. So think of it like a GPS. It starts with one question. Where are you now? Not where you want to be, but where you actually are now.
And so it's getting real.
Right. And if I had a chalkboard, yeah, and I would draw a diagram. But basically, I'll explain it like this. Picture a road running from left to right. On the far left is somebody in financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And on the far right is financial wellness. Every one of us is somewhere on that road. So my Stevens are simply five stopping points along the journey. Grieving Stephen, who's on the extreme left, he's standing and he is in huge debt and he is in genuine crisis. The debt is managing him. He's not managing his debt. That's the extreme left. Mm-hmm. Then you have bleeding Stephen. So this person is going from paycheck to paycheck. There's no buffer, no breathing room. One unexpected expense away from becoming grieving Stephen. So he's working hard but going nowhere. Then we get to the middle, right? A little bit cliched, I suppose, but break even Stephen. This is the invisible one. His bills get paid. Nothing is building, though. He looks completely fine from the outside. The most common profile I see is kind of this break-even Stephen. He's basically on a treadmill, just running and running and going nowhere. Then we get believing Stephen. He's turned a corner, stable. He's got some savings, starting to believe that progress is actually possible. The work now is direction and discipline. And then finally, we have achieving Stephen on the extreme right. He's built real success. He now faces a different challenge, protecting it. Staying wealthy requires a very different discipline to getting there. So that broadly are the five Stevens, as I said, on this road running from left to right.
So, John, can people move from one Steven to another, both positive and negatively?
Yes, totally. This isn't permanent. Yes. It's a location where you are right now. And locations can obviously change. So, yes, a believing Stephen who takes the wrong debt at the wrong time can become a bleeding Stephen very quickly. Unexpected medical bill, a business that fails, retrenchment. Any of these can move a person to the left, which is into the red, whereas if you get a salary increase or whatever it is and you change your life, then you're going to be moving forward to the right. And I think it's important to know that these different Stephens, they aren't a verdict. They just are a starting point to know, where am I now?
We'll be right back after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're listening to Imperfectly Polished, and today's conversation isn't about making people feel guilty. It's about helping them make informed choices. Jonathan, you ask one question that really stopped me in my tracks. If your salary never increases again, what would your current lifestyle still be sustainable?
And it's such an important question, and most people don't ask it. So
let's unpack it.
Right. We build our lifestyles based on an assumption that there's going to be growth. There's going to be next year is going to be better. Next year there's going to be a salary increase. Business is going to boom, you know, one hopes. But what if it doesn't? It's a question that requires an honest audit, and not necessarily of what you spend, but what have you quietly assumed? Mm-hmm. And for example, that, you know, the income is going to go up. The families that are fine, that answer that kind of question, they are resilient. The ones who don't, they have some serious work to do. And I suppose that's a starting point, right, of this discussion.
I just want to say, if anyone wants to join our conversation, it's an important one, or has a question for Johnny, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. So why is that question such an important starting point? Let's begin with people who are already in financial stress, Johnny. What are the first steps that they need to take?
So before I answer that, I want to just split the room into two. You know, it's a bit, it's not 100% scientific, but let's just split the room, as I said, into two. And as you say, people, let's talk number one, the people that are already in this financial distress, because they're going to get a different set of instructions
yes.
to the second group. So let's start off, right? As mm-hmm. I said, you already are, and if I use my Stevens, you're mm-hmm. already a grieving Stephen or a bleeding Stephen. Mm-hmm. The fire is already burning. You don't need investment advice right now.
No, you need practical.
And you need to stop the bleeding.
Yes.
While group number two, who aren't in it yet, they are more the break-even Stevens, the younger couples, and people who feel okay, but whose habits, they are quietly building, but it hasn't exploded yet, potentially. Mm-hmm. So let's talk, firstly about the group number one. Mm-hmm. You have to stop the bleeding, as I said, and only then can you start the healing. The first thing I would do, again, these are just some very broad strokes, but you have to get an honest picture. You need to know what the numbers are.
Take your head out the sand.
Right, that's what I said last week. You're listening.
Of course.
if you don't know how bad it is, then what? You cannot manage something that you don't acknowledge. You have to pull out those bank statements, those credit cards. You have to do it. That's the starting point. What I would say next is mm-hmm. stop acquiring debt immediately. Not to reduce your debt, but to stop. The hole cannot be filled while the spade is still digging. That's got to be mm-hmm. priority number two. Then I would say after that is don't try and solve this alone. There are professionals out there that can help you, whether they are debt counselors, financial counselors, trusted advisors. You need to get the help and as early as possible.
I just think money is such an emotional topic that people might not want to reach out, even though they want to get there and they want to move from being a one Stephen to another, but they are so emotionally invested in the anxiety around money, John.
Right, and I understand that, but it's like if you've got a medical problem, so I don't want to go to the doctor, I'm scared. You need to go to a professional, somebody that knows what they're doing, someone that you want to go to someone that you can trust. And
Without judgment. That's what...
And I think this is
a big point.
It's a little bit of a controversial take, and a lot of people say to me, are you a financial advisor? And I say, no, I'm not. And I'm not one for a reason. Again, I'm not going to knock any financial advisors. Yeah, mm-hmm. just like anything in life, there's some good ones and some bad ones. But I think the biggest issue with a financial advisor, as we know it in South Africa, it's very different overseas. It's got mm-hmm. a different connotation. But in South Africa, a financial advisor is a person who sells you a product. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I've seen some unsavory things where all they care about is selling you the next product.
Yes.
And that's kind of where I step in, and I'm a financial counselor, I'm a chartered accountant, and I sit with you, and I'm not selling you a product. I am the product. I'm there to hold your hand, to go through whatever it is, and I suppose that's there may be this big gap in the market, which I'm trying to take, but I suppose at the same time, I was saying it to you off air, is my job is very difficult because I'm dealing with obviously people that are generally in a financial quagmire and they don't generally have the money to pay me for my time. So it's a bit of a tricky occupational hazard.
It is a tricky occupational hazard. So a question is come through. What is the difference between saving and investing? Most people don't know the difference.
Right. So I think, we can touch on it. Mm-hmm. But saving is a time frame kind of concept, mm-hmm. and that is you put money in a bank account and it's going to earn interest, mm-hmm. and that will be your classic savings type
nest
of approach.
Egg.
Yeah, a nest egg, but it's not something long term.
Okay.
Whereas an investment is something which is a lot more long term in nature, where you would put it, for example, in shares or in unit trusts or ETFs, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But I think the question, I appreciate the question, but I think the question is, should we be investing or should we be paying off debt? I suppose that's a question that people ask me a lot. And I think that's a very important question. And the answer to that is it depends which Stephen you are.
Yes.
Because to say to you, oh, no, you have to pay off your debt. Okay, that might work for you, but it might not work for somebody else. So if you are grieving Stephen or if you are bleeding Stephen, your priority right now is not saving, it's not investing. They don't need to know, the grieving Stevens of the world. They don't need to know what investing and what, shares. It's not for them right now.
No.
Don't worry about it.
Yes.
Please God, one day that will become your concern. But you need to know where you are. As I said, your GPS, your location, which Stephen am I, and you'll have a certain instructions what to do from that point.
So one of the hardest things you talk about is making lifestyle changes, selling the car, downsizing the house, cutting back on holidays. Why do you think that's so emotionally difficult?
Well, I think it's in this community, lifestyle is identity. And
keeping up.
Right. And what you drive, where you live, what school your children attend, and the clothing, it signals something mm-hmm. about you. Taking that away or even reducing it, it feels like a statement about your worth, your success, your standing. That is why people resist, you know, even if the math demands it. But here's the truth. The performance is costing more than the thing itself. The shame of downsizing is temporary. Hmm. The consequence of not doing is permanent. And I think that's so important. Sometimes courage looks like saying no to people that expect you to always say yes. That, I think, is an important starting point.
Another question. I want to know what I'm doing wrong. I'm not an idiot. Between my husband and I, we have a six-figure salary, and we are not coming out every month.
I want the listener to know that they are not alone. Because I've just a few months ago, I met with somebody with a family, and very similar to this. Also earning massive salary. I'm saying millions of rands. Mm-hmm. And the person was in so much debt, they didn't know what to do with themselves. And the problem isn't the problem. This isn't because you don't know how to budget.
Mm-hmm.
You might not be very good at budgeting, but as I said last week, you do have a budget.
Yes.
And again, I know I said it last week, but I want to repeat it. And that is, what is a budget? A budget is a scorecard. Mm-hmm. It tells you that you lost. Doesn't tell you how you lost or why you lost. So I want the listener and other people that are tuning in to know that and to actually appreciate the question, because it really, it's coming back to your question about salary increases.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter how much money you are earning. It's what you're doing with that money. And that's the important point.
You speak about the missing middle families who earn for assistance. This is so important, but not enough to live comfortably. Why are they under such immense pressure?
So, and it kind of talks to the question that you had from the listener. And firstly, there's this concept of the missing middle. And just to, not a definition, but just to kind of explain it, is they families who earn, as you say, too much to qualify for financial assistance, but too little to comfortably afford their lifestyle around them. So they receive no support available to people that are in financial distress. But also at the same time, they don't have the financial freedom of those at the top. They're caught in the middle, quite literally. I actually got the idea from in South Africa, we have the missing middle in terms of financial aid. It's called the NASFAS. And there, just very basically, is that they're university students who can't afford to pay the full fees, and they earn a little bit, so they don't qualify for a full subsidy. So that's the missing middle there.
Mm.
So in South Africa, in our Jewish community, bringing it back, let's look at school fees, for example.
Big one.
I like to look at three groups. The first group is they can just pay the school fees without stress, right? It doesn't matter. Yes, they'll moan a little bit, but they'll pay it with absolutely no stress. That's group number one. Then group in the middle, which we'll come back to, but let's just drop to group number three, and that is, these are people that genuinely can't afford it, and they get subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
So we know group number one at the top and group number three at the bottom, but then there's this middle, and they pay the full, literally and figuratively, the full fees every year, but each increase makes it harder and harder for them. They receive no subsidy, no relief, and very little recognition that they're carrying an enormous burden. But the fees, this is the point, is that's the starting point.
They could be heading toward a crisis, but they're not there yet.
Right. And the fees is only the beginning. This is the interesting part. When you pay for a premium school, you're also entering a social environment. The Israel tours, camps, fundraisers, the recommended laptops.
Extramurals.
Extra activities, extramurals, birthday parties, holidays. None of these are compulsory on paper, but many families feel they're compulsory socially. The school fees, this is the interesting thing, is that the school fees buy entry into an ecosystem whose expectations are often set by the wealthiest families. I like to call it the association trap. From the outside, everyone looks the same. the same school, the same uniform,
yes,
same clothes, same suburb, very similar cars.
I was going to say same cars.
Same cars, but behind closed doors, these families are making enormous sacrifices simply to stay in the room. They're paying to sit at a table that they cannot afford to eat at. That's what I call the missing middle. And if that's you, if that resonates, just know that you're not necessarily failing. You're caught in a structural problem that we don't talk about, honestly enough. We don't talk about it. The answer isn't shame. It's being brutally honest about you and what you can genuinely sustain. Having the courage to actually build the life that you can afford rather than the one that you feel expected to perform.
So then do you think that missing middle has the equal opportunity now to go and ask for a subsidy?
Sure, that's a difficult one. I think
they're there, but they're not just there, but they're struggling,
right, so,
but they're not, but so, something has to give.
Yeah, so again, just speaking the data that I know, mm-hmm, is that more and more people are taking on subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the reality. So, you know, even just by the reality is that,
yes,
that's what's happening. It's organically happening anyway.
Yes.
More and more people are getting subsidies, and the difficult part will happen, as I mentioned last week, when it blows up, right?
Yes.
How will it blow up? There's a lack of donors, there's donor fatigue, and mm-hmm, it's eventually going to happen. When will it happen? I don't even say I'm a doomsday, you know, next week or next month. I don't
know.
You're
not predicting.
I'm not predicting, but what I can predict with certainty is within each family, within each nuclear family, mm-hmm, there are time bombs going off, as I said last week. The manifestation of that is families falling apart, divorce. There's this
suicide.
Yeah. These things are happening. Substance abuse,
mm-hmm,
financial abuse. It's happening. That is what's happening to this middle class. And unfortunately, it's the missing middle class that's taking the brunt of this.
You also introduced the idea of the lifestyle timeline, Johnny. What is it, and why do so many young couples fall into the trap?
So, yeah, it's something that I've, again, come across over the years, and I'll tell you a story mm-hmm, to bring home the point, is that a couple came to see me a couple of years ago, both mid-20s, married, obviously, as I said, and they were under significant financial stress, and they couldn't understand why. So we went through the expenses, we went through, you know, the car, the house that they were renting, and the holidays, the standard of living, and eventually I said to them, whose life does this look like? And then they were giving me some interesting answers, their friends. I said, yeah, maybe. And then eventually, after a long pause, they said, this is my parents' life.
Yes, I was just about to answer that.
Who were in their late 50s,
yes,
early 60s. They've been building their parents for 30 years.
Yeah.
And what they were trying to do, this couple, is they were trying to start at the end of someone else's journey. That house that the parents were in, it took 30 years to pay the bond. The car, that's 10 years of career progression.
They wanted instantly.
Right. The holidays, they funded from saving. The lifestyle was not available to your parents at their age necessarily.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
John, we often compare our year 2 to someone else's year 20. How damaging can that comparison be financially?
It's unfair, obviously, from the start. You're comparing your private reality to someone else's public performance. But the debt that results is very real. Young couples who build the foundation at 25, before children, before the bond, before the bigger lifestyle, they are in a fundamentally different position to the couples who try and build it at, say, 35 with 3 children already in school.
Trying to compare apples with oranges.
Exactly.
So, John, one of the biggest causes of conflicts in relationships is money. We've said that last week, we'll say it again. How can couples start having healthier financial conversations without playing the blame game?
So yeah, the fight, it's not only about money when couples fight. It usually manifests like that, but if you pull the thread, you'll find it's about expectations, fear, or a value that you don't share with your spouse. The conflict is almost never about the number.
Yeah.
It's about what the number means to each person, I would say. One partner sees the holiday as a necessary, just for the relationship.
Like it's not even up for discussion,
yeah,
you're going
yeah,
on holiday.
Exactly. The other will see it as irresponsible.
Mm.
neither is wrong. They just have different values and have never said so out loud. Start, what I would say is, you start with the bank statements, but with this question: what did money look like in the home when you grew up?
I think that the huge part of the conversation, you're trying to bring together two people when they get married with two different sets on values of how money worked in their families.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I've said this again, and you know, my three pillars, as I said earlier on, the third one is prevention. And what the best shot that we've got of really making a positive change to the community is this prevention, and that is education, and that it's running shows and running workshops for younger couples
who, and making it okay to speak about money.
Exactly, not when it's too late, right?
Yeah.
Like, as I said, I get the phone call when the house proverbially is on fire. I want you to call me before you've bought the house and say, do I need to buy the house or should I be renting it? We're not having that discussion. And I know, yes, there is premarital lessons that couples have.
Yes.
Does it work? I'm not convinced. I think only once you are in it, I'm speaking for myself here, only once you are married and you are paying for your wife's medical aid and you are paying for her credit card, are you in it?
Yes.
Before you get married, it's all so hypothetical, and the same with children.
Yes.
People say, no, this is what's going to happen, right? When you have kids, it's going to be like this. And you have no idea. Until you actually have that child and what comes with it, then you know. So my focus and my passion and my drive is for the energy to be
preventative.
Preventative. As well as, and again, now what is a preventative? As I said earlier on, we need to have the behavior and talk about the behavior and have the technical stuff. Yes, you need to know how to budget proverbially.
Yes.
And you need to know what debt is and what good debt, bad debt. You need to know those things. That's important. But the element of prevention for this discussion, I think, is crucial.
So this is also a very important point to touch on, John, and I'll let you answer this. Parents often struggle when their kids ask, why can't we have what everyone else has? How do we have that conversation honestly without making our children feel deprived, in inverted commas?
It's a difficult one. I think we've made it a lot more difficult than it needs to be. But
can we just say no?
Yeah, sure. And just to repeat what I said last week, and that is all about affordability. Can you afford it? Yes or no?
We'll be back right after the ad break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
So let's continue with the question of how do we have that conversation honestly about money with our children, John?
So as I said before the break, affordability, right? Can you afford it? As I said last week, everyone wants to be on the top medical aid.
Yes.
They want to be on Classic Comprehensive or, you know, whatever, the executive plan. Can you afford it? That's the first question. But just to unpack it a little bit more, I would rather hear, my child hears, we're choosing to spend our money differently, then rather than growing up believing that every family has to keep up with everyone else. That's just my priority. One of the greatest gifts that I think that you can give your child is teaching them that every financial decision is a trade-off. We could buy this, but we would give something else up, because that's how real life works.
Yes.
Again, there's no solution, only trade-offs. I do this with my children when I take them to the shops. And that is, they say, can I buy this? And I say, you can have this and the chocolate. Then, you know, we go another aisle.
Yes.
Oh, can I have this? I said, yeah, but then we'll have to put the chocolate back. Then we go and we see a sweet. Okay, can I have the sweet? Okay, then we have to put... And that's how life is. We proverbially have to make those trade-offs, you know, with our children to tell them, you choose the chocolate or you choose the drink. You have to pick your poison at the end of the day.
So many people are carrying shame around their financial situation. How do they begin asking for help?
This is so important that they have to say it out loud just to one person. That's the first step. They have to not necessarily book a professional appointment, but you have to speak to someone.
Someone
that you trust, someone that will take you seriously. And it's just that one sentence, which is, we're struggling and I don't know what to do. It's so important that's the first step. And I'm hoping, again, through Chai FM, through people in the community, that this will hopefully spark a bigger
definitely
reaction and an initiative. Because if more people, because I know this isn't, I've got the data, I see people all the time, I talk to people, as I say, all the time, people are bringing this up to me, and let's deal with it.
Let's deal with it. So if someone listening today feels completely overwhelmed, and from our discussion last week, what's the very first practical step they should take this week? Apart from you saying finding someone to talk to, anything else?
Yes. So I think the honest conversation is so important with your partner, whether it's your boyfriend, whether it's a wife, whether it's a sibling, whatever it actually
parents.
Is. Yeah. And I think that's the important point. And start off to have an honest conversation. And I think it's not only between the spouse, as you say, but also with the parents. Mm. Let them in. Have the honest conversation with them. Because, again, it can go either way, this situation with the parents. I don't know one person, Monique, in the community that isn't getting some form of financial assistance from their parents. And as I said last week, and I'll repeat it again, it's like a mantra, and that is that what is happening now with this missing middle is that the parents are funding their children to pay school fees, to pay medical aid, and the parents themselves are funding it, and they are not going to have money necessarily or such.
They're moving towards retirement
and they're not going to have sufficient for their retirement. Yes. Never mind our retirement, where we're not building.
That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, I'll tell you something that I met with a person that works at a big bank, and they said, how much money do you think a person should have today, when they retire? So they said they think the number is 30 million. I said, you're not in reality, my friend.
That's
the actuaries can work out like that, yes, you need. Because most people are living beyond 65, and that's the number. And I said, there's no one that I know that has anywhere near that number. But that's the number that we are expected to get to, according to the experts. And those are the experts who are trying to give us financial advice. I mean, it's not realistic.
No, not realistic at all. John, if listeners only remember one thing from both of our conversations together, what do you hope it is?
Well, I hope they go to my website and download my book.
Please do that.
That would be quite nice. It's www.themoneyguy.co.za. But I think we're trying to achieve this financial wellness. It doesn't begin when your bank balance changes. Mm-hmm. It begins when you're honest about where you are today. It's not necessarily when that credit card's paid off or when the salary goes up. Now, obviously, there's an important sentence that is you have to say it out loud. Mm-hmm. There's a problem. If you've got a problem, you need to deal with it. That's the starting point. And then the situation can be addressed. But, every recovery that I've ever seen started this way. Not necessarily with a plan, but with a conversation. That's the starting point.
Jonathan, thank you for joining us once again and for continuing a conversation that so many people need to hear. If there's room and space for a third one, we might do that. Over the past 2 weeks, we've learned that financial wellness isn't about perfection and certainly isn't about pretending. It's about honesty. It's about understanding where you are today, making intentional choices, and recognizing that every financial journey begins with one small, courageous step. If there's one message I'll be taking away from these conversations, it's this. Money isn't the goal. Peace is. And peace begins the moment we stop comparing, stop pretending, and start having honest conversations with ourselves, our partners, and with the people who can help us move forward. Thank you for joining for part 2 of the special conversation on Imperfectly Polished. Until next time, take care of yourselves, give yourselves grace, and remember that life isn't about being perfect, it's about being beautifully, imperfectly polished.